Welcome to the Banking Reinvented podcast. Every week, we discuss how banks can progressively modernize their customer journeys and model business operations around their customers. You're listening to Tim Rutten, and I'll be joined by Backbase CEO and founder Jouk Pleiter and other senior banking leaders from around the globe. Ready to unpack how to re-architect banking together? Let's get started.
Hey everyone, it's your host Tim Rutten here. Today, we have a very special podcast episode for you because we've recorded our panel sessions during Engage Europe, which happened a few weeks ago here in Amsterdam, where at Engage, we bring together the industry's leading minds to discuss how we can redefine the banking industry together. We had some amazing talks with some truly inspiring leaders, and we don't want you to miss out on them. So let's dive right in.
All right, here we go again. Final panel. The title of the panel is Defeating Digital Natives, How Your Bank Can Modernize to Keep Up with the Competition, and then specifically digital natives that are out there, the Monzos, the Revoluts, the Bunks in the Netherlands as an example. For the discussion of today, I have four wonderful panelists. Please come to the stage, Matt, Fabiano, Dola, and Peter Jan. Let's do a quick round of introductions, starting with Peter Jan.
Thank you, Tim. Peter Jan van der Ven, working for Hexaware as a global VP of digital banking and also responsible for the business development of the EMEA region. Hexaware, we are a global technology and outsourcing company doing the whole chain from build, run, optimize, transform using technology, specifically working for digital and software service line. Where we work together with Backbase. We are the largest partner of Backbase with 400 FTE globally trained and certified and making sure that we build great customer experiences, leveraging the Backbase platform amongst others.
Well, thanks. Dola?
Hello, everyone. My name is Dola Fischola. I am a director in our consulting practice at PwC. I work with banks, specifically with private banks, wealth managers, and retail banks to think about their customer experiences today, where they want it to go, and then thinking through how we bring technology to help them solve those problems and get to where they need to be.
Hi, Matt Williamson. I've got a really long title, which is SVP and Industry Principal, which basically means I'm effectively Chief Pain in the Ass Officer. What that really means is I get brought in to help our customers, advisory, help shape the way the business growth occurs. And a lot of that comes down to customer experience. And I think that's going to be a big part of the conversation today. But Endava, if you don't know, some do. Other people have never heard of us. We're 13,000 people globally around the world. We have a big acquisition strategy. So in the first 12 months I was here, we acquired four companies, which gives you, an idea to our aspirations around growth. And we've recently become a fully fledged Backbase partner. And we're looking to build that relationship. And I'm really glad to be here with these panelists. I know, PJ and I used to work together. Dola and I had lunch today, so I know she's doing feeds. I know very well. We were just discussing off camera. So, really looking forward to the discussion. I've told Tim to make it hard.
I will.
And I would recommend when we get to questions, hopefully we get to that at the end, please make it difficult for us. That's what we're here for. It's not supposed to be a nice, everyone's high-fiving and having fun. It's make it difficult. Make the most of our brains.
Perfect.
Thank you, guys. Fabiano Loris here, Head of Partnerships at Feedzai. We are helping more than 150 financial institutions worldwide to fight financial crime. I lead partnerships, and we believe that through the partnerships is the best way for you to grow, but also to help your clients to implement your product faster, but also to have a better experience with your products. So it's really nice to be here. And to start this partnership with Backbase, together we want to help our clients not only to provide a better engagement to their end customers, but also provide the best risk or fraud prevention platform in the market. So thank you very much for having us here.
Clear. Let's get things started. So in terms of context, guys, we're going to be discussing modernization at large, which also has been formerly known as transformation. Perhaps it's even the same thing. It's just a new, definition for it. But nevertheless, maybe to kick things off, over the past decade, you've seen a lot of digital transformation programs in the industry already. What are the key insights from that first decade or from that first wave of moving into a new way of embracing technology? Perhaps we can start with you, Dola.
Yeah, I've got the microphone, so why not?
That's why.
So when I think about it, actually, if you think back kind of 10 to 15 years ago, you had most banks really thinking about digitizing processes, usually the kind of manual-based processes like lending applications, online login applications as well for new-to-bank customers. And that has evolved in a number of different ways. So yes, it's moved digitally. What you're now seeing is that transformation, that end-to-end transformation. So not just looking at it from a kind of individual siloed perspective, but how can you start to integrate some of those systems together so that digital end-to-end transformation then becomes a thing. So you've almost moved from multi-channel to omni-channel. Now it's integrated channel is what I'm hearing more and more. And then on the technology side, funnily enough, I was speaking to somebody earlier today and I mentioned the fact that 10 years ago, I remember being in a conversation with a major bank in the UK and I was marched out of the room for suggesting that they move to the cloud because there was real kind of terror around it back then around, you know, where am I going to host customer data? What do you mean it's going to be hosted in a different country? Regulation hadn't quite caught up and that was what really brought on that kind of anxiety around transforming from a cloud perspective. And if you now fast forward to today, what you're seeing is some of the kind of digital natives are essentially cloud native platforms, right? And you've now seen how from a traditional banking perspective, when we start to do digital transformation, how flexibility, how scalability has really been helped by moving to the cloud. You're seeing that you can now really bring digital products much faster, you can scale them much, much faster. So that those conversations and me being marched out of the room for talking about cloud doesn't quite happen anymore, luckily.
Yeah, so the ingredients have become better over the past decade. Peter-Jan, your view?
Yes, for sure. You know, the good thing is that that technology has evolved. If you see how it all started, it was first digital, was only the very thin front layer, and then we started from architecture up to down to start modernizing, never in an integrated way. It always followed the technology. So we had branch first, then we had the internet banking, and then mobile, which created this whole siloed approach. And the great thing that technology has evolved now with these integrated platforms that you were talking about, that's great to see. But also from another perspective, if I look at evolvement in how these things are approached, I think 10 years ago, when clients would come to us, they would come with their whole own list of these are my requirements and you should put it in the systems as is. Luckily, the mindset has also shifted and banks these days, they understand that it's also good to adopt your own processes on your side to the vendors that you have in your landscape. And because only then you can keep it within the frameworks as much as possible out of the box of the software vendors that you have. And that will save you a lot of hassle that we all know that has been created in the past decades.
Yeah. Building on top of that, to me, it reminds me of what our value consulting team internally also always speaks of. You can do a digital transformation and maybe repurpose a few of the systems that you might have in place, but not do a business transformation, which really means moving the organization forward. That is culture, that is DNA, that is talent, that is processes and technology. Maybe Matt, from your end, do you recognize that as well?
Yeah, I think just to echo what PJ was saying a second ago, when I was at Mysis, then became Finastra, it was the same conversation. You'd go in, you'd be selling a software solution, but it would be, I want the blue button on the left-hand side of the screen. Why? Because that's where the blue button goes. It was never, can we streamline the process? What's the way that we can make this more efficient? It was just, we need something new and shiny to replace what's there. Not realizing that actually you're just introducing a new shiny legacy application system suite. So we're seeing more and more in the industry that the mindset has changed. You know, I'll be frank, brutal, whatever you want to say, a lot of dinosaurs have left the banking industry. You know, they've retired, etc. And they had no incentivization to make a difference. Why would I change something? I'm going to leave in the next 5-10 years, whatever it is. If I steer this ship well and it, you know, continues to grow at 3% a year, great. If I take a big risk that could pay off heavily, but it doesn't work, that's going to impact me. And then the other side as well is everyone at the bank or an FI, are they all aligned to the same mission? Just because the CEO, CDO says this is the direction of travel, we need to do these things, are procurement aligned to that? Because you know, we've all dealt with procurement services. You have a great conversation, we go to contract, and suddenly, well, no, we need to see a 10% discount minimum off the back of this first contract that came across my desk, or I, or the group, don't get our bonus. That's not playing into the overall vision. So there's all these facilities and players within that you need to get a bigger grip around. Park tech is what I would say. We still hear the conversation. We'll talk about AI later, but everyone gets excited about the new tech thing. What is it you're trying to solve as an organization, as a business? who's the customer base you're going after, what are their needs, then map back from there and apply the right technical solution, whether it's build it in-house, partner, ecosystem. But make sure, and it's very Steve Jobs, but be customer-centric. What are you going for? What are you going to achieve? And then that's when you'll see the success of we've invested X amount. This is the growth policy. This is the retention we've gained from that. And I think otherwise I'll talk here all day and we'll never get to dinner. I'd also look at when we go in and speak with banks, FIs, is bring up the phrase revenue leakage. That's another thing, as well as customer retention. Where are you leaking revenue? Because your software strategy, your business strategy could address that. And that can be huge as opposed to just, you know, landing net new customers.
Revenue leakage also to me signals perhaps more of a compliance fraudulent risk context, maybe on your end. Over the past decade, what have you seen in the transformational efforts that has maybe even given headwinds to FIDSAI?
Yeah, if we look at into the payment side, you know, and how the central banks evolved in terms of developing new payment solutions or new payment systems. I'm from Brazil, so you guys know what we have been doing with Pix. This was a huge revolution, but also all the incentives that happened in terms of the financial inclusion. And then with that, a huge challenge, because when you're looking into the flexibility that the central banks gave to the new banks, and I'm not challenging this, but with that, with lower regulations and lower demands in terms of KYC and et cetera, what we saw is that the fraud was coming from the new banks because of lower restrictions in terms of how you should onboard end users. And then with that, obviously, with instant payments and real-time payments, it becomes more difficult for you to block the fraudsters. You know, it's not only about that. You know, it's all the things that happen in around PSD2 and open banking, which helped then users to access more information and to have access to more products, but also how the new banks challenged the legacy ones, let's call it this way, because in the end, when you have flexibility in terms of opening a new market for the challenger banks and the new banks at the same time, you make the big banks to think about how they can leave the product-centric approach. And as you said, Matt, to be more like a customer-centric. And then obviously with that, we saw a huge evolution in terms of not only a product offering, but how the central banks and the banks needed to adapt themselves in order to offer better products to their clients. And one of the things that we saw from a FIDSAI perspective, but also I come from the core banking world, is that with the pandemic, a huge need of evolution on the tech stack, you know? And so that what we saw is that a huge investments on core bankings, a huge investments on cloud systems, mainly to support with this acceleration, but also to support their clients in terms of them not needing to go to the branches anymore. Yeah. And then with that, without having an in-presence KYC process or an onboarding process, you need to rely on information that are coming from the internet, and that with that, helping the bad actors to get into the systems. And obviously, what we are seeing right now, it's huge scams and huge things around fraud that are happening. And by having a solution to fight using AI and machine learning, this has obviously helped the banks to fight better the criminals.
Yeah. So if I listen a bit through the lines here, I'm basically hearing that over the past decade, the key insight is, one, there's better technology available, it's more mature, it's easier to work with, if I may. I hear a little bit of a trend in a change of mindset. Basically, how do you approach the transformational effort? Do you go, here's the laundry list, copy-paste, basically taking the old world into the new, and yeah, we're digital now. And the third one being, you, of course, also need all the auxiliary capabilities to, you know, have a full suite digital banking experience. Nevertheless, given where we are today, and we're also still here today as Backbase, apparently we have a market, it's not done. We're not seeing the full progress just yet. You're in the market, of course, servicing these banks. What are the key challenges that you really see in the board, or at least at the top layer, that are, to a degree, committing to the journey, but still there's significant roadblocks? Like, what are the top ones that you see?
Well, if you look at, you know, why do you do these projects, right? It's all about increasing your customer experience, lowering your OPEX, making sure that you meet your regulatory compliance. So these are always the key drivers why these processes are there. If I look at, let's say, the key challenges that we see at board level, then it is, I think, also that mindset that we see, the real need and the real driver behind modernization. See it as not just a tech project, but see it as an opportunity to really modernize your bank, and also to modernize your value proposition. Because we see many times, indeed, as you, I think, also just said, copy paste what you had. The output of a new project is build something that you had in new technology. But if you do what you did, you get what you got. So that mindset of understanding that these things are an opportunity to really modernize also your value proposition, and understanding that and taking that into account, I think is a key challenge. This is also, I think, partly driven by the we talk about technology legacy, but I think organizational legacy, this whole mindset that is there, is even worse. Yep. And I think it's all about tackling that.
Two examples. Last week, Revolut did a spin-off with Revolut Invest to manage their $8.5 billion portfolio for wealth capabilities with that specific clientele. Recently, you see all the different announcements with Monzo ramping up, Nubank ramping up, Revolut ramping up, moving into countries and regions at force. I think the momentum is clearly there. Is it fair to say that banks so far are quite reactive to those moments in time where clearly the market is moving and there's new entrants, and all of a sudden it becomes more important to really go through and bite the bullet and modernize all the way? Is that a fair assessment, Dola? Do you see that? Do you recognize it?
Yeah, no, I do think it's a fair assessment. And so my background, I've also worked in one of the kind of biggest global banks in the world. And it absolutely is a fair assessment. But I think some of the challenges that lay quite clear is, I think mainly four. I think one, you've got an architecture problem, right? So traditional banks, as we all know, and we hear it all the time, legacy architecture, old infrastructure, really starting to think about how do they build around that. I think I'm going to steal Yauch's way of explaining it, but they need to progressively modernize and think about how do they go from either customer journey, segment by segment, in terms of rethinking, relayering that architecture, thinking about microservices, APIs, and all of that great stuff. I think, though, the other challenge is a people and a culture challenge when it comes to kind of trying to catch up with the natives, so to speak. And the reason why I say that actually is because when you think about it, in a traditional bank, they've been around for typically hundreds of years, and they would have established hierarchies, established ways of working, and you have to, unfortunately, get the right stakeholder buy-in, bring people on a journey, and all of that just takes time to do. Whereas as a digital native bank, as part of your DNA, you've got three actions, right? One, grow customers. Two, acquire new customers. And three, innovation. So the DNA is completely different in terms of when you then compare with the challenges that somebody sitting in a traditional bank who wants to innovate in the organization has. Then thirdly, from a people perspective, then you've got to think about, right, how do I hire the people with the right skills quite quickly? And there's a reason why emerging technology is called emerging technology. It's emerging, and therefore the skill sets that you need to be able to bring in-house, if that's what most of the traditional banks these days, especially in the UK, are trying to do, you need to be able to recruit these people very, very quickly. Not just recruit them very quickly, but as technology emerges, you need to be able to train them and upskill them very quickly. And again, thinking through the number of different domain owners that you have in organizations that you've got to try and get through to get the kind of business case for the innovation, all of that just takes time. And I really think that's a major challenge. And the last thing I would say then is also anticipating customer needs. So I already think the traditional banks are really behind, if I'm going to be really honest with you. There's something around people that kind of work in customer experience, we always talk about meeting customer expectations. That's yesterday. You're now supposed to be anticipating customer needs. And to do that, you need to have your data strategy basically figured out right now. And we all know that banks have probably the most data. They don't know how to harness it, don't know how to use it. It's scattergun. It's all over the place. You've got to think about data integrity. Is it the right data? Is it in the right place? Is it honest data? Is there integrity in that data? And if you then start to think about things like AI and how do I make that much more innovative? How do I start to anticipate customer needs? You're already on the back foot. Yeah. So if you think about all of those factors, I think that those are part of the challenges that the traditional banks have today.
Yeah. Different point of view. Of course, we have an audience of, let's say, the existing banks, right? Not the neobanks, not the digital natives. They also have a lot going for them on the positive side. Maybe Matt, you can comment. Compared to the digital natives, there's ingredients that they do not have. What do you think?
So it's a deliberate pause. And we have to be realistic in that the difference between a, we'll call it a traditional bank and challenger banks, just to set the segmentation, is as a bank, as a traditional bank, you have to safeguard regulatory risk, make sure your capital expenditure is there, look after the customer, data protection, etc., all these other things. And if anything goes wrong, because you're generally a big brand, the press take you apart. So that's the first thing. So that's challenging to be, you know, plus everything that Dola said as well about internal hierarchy, etc. If you're a challenger bank or a fintech, you previously generally had free money. You know, you got 10 million seed, series A, whatever it is, and you just burn through it on, I'll build a product. Oh, it didn't work. I'll junk that. What did I learn? I'll build the next one. I'll build the next one. I don't even necessarily have to have a banking license yet to offer banking services. Two different things. And if it goes wrong, oh, we're new at this, we're hiring someone in, you know, it's, oh, and we're cool, and the 21-year-olds don't really care about rightness and readiness and other things. It's, oh, my FX was free, my holiday, I could just use my Revolut card, and the, you know, the foreign exchange cost me nothing. That's the driver for them. So they're two different things. I think where traditional banks have got the value is, I need to address actually, I'm going to stutter around a bit, is brand loyalty. So I'll give you a direct example. So I'm not going to name the bank because they might be in the room. But I hold an account with the bank and someone managed to bypass all the security features and empty out my wife and I's entire life savings in one go. So pretty stressful, right? My wife is on the app. She rings me. I'm traveling because I always am in tears. Where's all the money gone? Followed by, what have you done? Thinking it was down to me.
What have you done?
Well, indeed. And then I was like, come on, it can't be that bad. Go and look. Same thing. So I ring the bank and say, this has happened, I'm really concerned. And they said, well, it must be your fault. That's the first thing. So just think about customer service 101. You've just seen all of your money go out the door. Not any empathy, I'm really sorry that happened. We're professional, we can help you with X, Y, and Z. And we went through a whole rigmarole of, we don't think it's our fault, you must have given something away, social engineering, et cetera, et cetera. It then came down to, this is going to take 12 months to resolve. Right? So not acceptable. And this is a tier one global bank, I will add. So at that point, I lost my temper. I'm not proud of it. And they said, Google me. And they did. And they saw I talk in the industry about banking and how it works. And you'd be amazed how quickly a senior person rang me back to say, we're going to fix this by tomorrow. Now, that's okay. But imagine if I was, pardon the phrase, a little old lady or an older gentleman who's lost their entire life savings and gets told, it's your fault and it's going to take 12 months to figure out. Not cool. But they had all the data points. Anyway, I'll come full circle. But fintechs, challenger banks don't really have that issue. They're offering cool brands, cool things, etc. So what you as a traditional bank have, you have all the data points. You have this massive global coverage. I think the panel earlier talked about, and you talked about data strategy. You should have a unified version of your customer. You should understand where they are. Another example, same bank, sorry. So I have a credit card with one of the same bank. I had, I think, a £400 balance on it and paid the minimum, and I just left it, paid no attention to it. I realized it stopped working. And I rang them and said, oh, it stopped working. And they said, oh, yeah, we've realized that because you've only paid the minimum balance for 12 months, you're financially at risk because you're not paying it off quick enough. So we've suspended it. I said, but you can see my wife and I get paid into this account and it far exceeds that amount. Again, same problem. Not our problem, sir. Sorry, but this is where we are. Whereas a fintech or a challenger bank will just react and reissue. We'll fix it. We'll resolve it. But traditional banks have this massive global coverage. You have all the data points. I know it's tricky, I know it's challenging, but you can actually service your customers. You can say, we anticipate your needs, we understand where you sit, we understand that you're 21, 25, you've just finished university, you may be buying a house, you may not, depends where you live in the world. Here are things we could do for you. This is how it would work. Here's a discounted mortgage, et cetera, et cetera. You don't get that. You get, I will go to the bank and ask for the mortgage.
Yep.
That may come across as a rant. It wasn't the intention, but I thought I'd just share.
I like it though.
Experience.
It's a beautiful private example. It's granted. Different perspective though. There's a neobank here in the Netherlands. They are super modern, completely self-service. My primary bank by now, but they completely faltered on the cybersecurity. They were in the news. I won't mention a name here. And it took them a few weeks of public disgrace to actually just meet the customer again and really do well for them and settle the funds that were stolen. That comes to you, of course, cybersecurity. How do you see that you need to balance the innovation pace with, you know, having the proper checks and balances in place?
Yeah, I think that the main challenge is, and going back into the big banks, you know, or the legacy banks or the traditional ones, based on what we are doing from a cybersecurity and fraud perspective. You know, what we are seeing is that these guys are the front runners in terms of the investment in new technologies from a fraud prevention and obviously from a cybersecurity protection, but also in terms of how they can improve their user experience without compromising the security on the channel side. So talking about the cybersecurity piece, you know, it's how the combination, because the cybersecurity world was completely segregated from the fraud world. And what we are seeing right now, it's a need of conversion between both of the worlds, because you're not only protecting the bank, but also by monitoring the digital channels, you can also protect the end users. And how we are seeing this is how we can combine the data that is coming from the digital channels in order to support the fraud team with the transactional data, and how a combination of both of these things can not only bring a better experience to the end users, and then with that less friction, but also in terms of reputational risks. And as you're saying, you know, what we are seeing right now is not only about here, but also we see in Brazil with PIX and instant payments, huge, huge problems with scams and social engineering, that it's not only related to the security of the bank, but also what we are seeing is that old people have access to the mobile phones. Old people, they are using internet banking because they don't want to go anymore to the branch. And in the end, if you don't have the right tools to protect the users, you're going to be in trouble, you know? So we're going back to the first question, you know, banks need to become client-centric. Not only how I can protect my clients, but also how can I reduce the friction without compromising the security? So from a traditional bank's perspective, we have been very successful in terms of how these banks are seeing this world and how they can converge because of their capacity of investments, mm-hmm. which is very, very, very positive. And this combines with what you guys are offering as a platform. You know, if they can have the best user experience, and this is somebody I was speaking with Duke yesterday, the best user experience together with the tool that can also protect without generating friction, probably this is the best approach that banks should take, you know? So from looking into how the big banks are invested into that, but also combine it with the challenges that they are facing from the new banks, it's very interesting, you know? But obviously, criminals are evolving much, much faster than the banks, and this is like a continuous fight that we need to have.
Yeah, you have to be fast on your feet. Peter?
Yeah, just wanted to react to that. Also, the example that you gave of the bank, which name we will not share, they claimed that it was all about customer centricity because they don't want frictions in the process. This neo bank, they don't. Say my incumbent bank, if I want to increase my limit, it takes 4 hours for it to be activated. This neo bank says I don't want that because that's not customer centric. So the key here is also to find the balance between that. And here I think that a neobank can probably go further because they can get away with the security incident somehow better than an incumbent can. I think somehow you see that this one really escalated.
Totally.
It's always about finding the right balance. And it also needs to fit who you are as a bank. You have your own risk appetite, and that will for sure differ from an incumbent towards a neo. Technology has also helped here with fingerprint, with facial recognition. All these things are already more secure and easier, and at the same time, customer-centric. But with security, yep. Especially these type of cases, it's a deliberate choice. You know, how much risk do you want to take compared to, the client-centricity that you're aiming for?
To close off this topic, fun fact, this particular neobank by now has very much the same security metrics measures in place like any incumbent bank. They would delay setting the limit. They delay bigger payments by 24 hours. So I think the balance is, it's not that unclear, but they were way too risky in that sense. And they put it with the customer, which that's not very customer-centric. Moving on to customer centricity, Dolla, question for you. What is the formula that you believe out of your experience works best to really redesign the bank around the customer?
So I think client obsession, not necessarily just being client-centric, but client obsession, and ask me what does that look like? I think two main things in terms of how you become client-obsessed. So it is really about trying to figure out how to better listen and action what customers are saying and in real time. So looking at the likes of the Revolut, of the Monzos of this world, the Starlings, one of the things that they do really, really well is, you know, really active social media listening, for example, direct in-app feedback. And they are able to take some of that and almost kind of release on a daily, hourly, sometimes weekly basis. Traditional banks can do the same as well, but what we tend to see, it's like kind of it's survey based. By the time you analyze that data, share it at the C-suite, present it back, the customer has moved on to the next problem. So for me, really, you know, how do you become much more customer centric in terms of designing those experiences? It's about that close feedback loop and trying to eliminate some of the processes that get in the way of doing that and being able to action that feedback really, really well and quite quickly. The second thing is then that kind of build, test, iterate model as well. One thing that's really, really clear is that by the time, as I said earlier, by the time you've got all the company behind you, you've got the business case signed off, what tends to happen is that who's going to stand up and say, actually, we've got this wrong? So shutting things down is really, really hard to do. Right? Everyone's nodding. You agree? It's hard to do. You've spent a lot of time canvassing support, you've made your business case, you stood up in front of the board, you've got the investment, you're starting to build, and then something goes wrong or it's not quite right. How do I then start to stand up and say, sorry guys, I've got this wrong? It's hard to do, but the native banks do it. They do it very quickly. They shut things down when it doesn't work. And I think that's another thing around building around client centricity, being honest with yourself around, is this the right thing for the customer? I know there's challenges around, you know, making the investment case. I know there's challenges around what your kind of short-term financial goals need to be. But really being client-centric, being client-obsessed means actually being bold enough as banks to be able to make those decisions.
To me, it also sounds moving to proactive, like leaning in, leaning forward, and really designing the customer journey across all domains, all different lines of business. Not based on an issue that you have that you need to solve right now, but basically deliver the best experience ever, which will, improve the customer lifetime value. Grow their share of wallet, grow adoption, grow usage, make sure the retention is hopefully increasing, inclusive of the NPS, which then even might relate to driving better loyalty, having other people invite them to the bank. I think that's a bit of the flywheel that you would hope to see, and basically those efforts drive that type of behavior, I imagine.
Yeah, exactly. What is the customer looking for at the end of the day? You know, how do you measure that? You know, bringing it right back to the customer, as you've said, is really important in terms of kind of driving that ambition and really being customer-centric in everything that you're designing, everything that you're doing, everything that you're saying as well, right? Because customers are becoming much more savvy in terms of listening, brand awareness, as we talked about, right? So are you doing what you're saying you're doing, especially the younger generation? You call them the 21 or the 25-year-olds. I know you said it in a nice way, but actually, when you look at the sentiment around that, they are really looking at the banking world and asking themselves, are these banks doing what they say that they are doing? Otherwise, they're walking away and they're moving on to the next.
Yeah. I also know customer centricity is a big topic in the work that you do in Hexaware. Anything to add to Dolla's view?
I think what is also important, looking from the bank perspective, and you touched it also slightly, is that you have it in an efficient way. And we publish reports where we continuously follow 80 banks in the world and see what are the features that they ship to their customers. We categorize them into must-haves, delighters, but also what are really differentiating features. And sometimes when we get RFPs in, we see that banks, they just copy all the features in the world and think, if I put those in an app, I will be a successful bank. But there's two things to it. One, that is really expensive. And two, I think you also need to understand as a bank, who am I? You know, what's my identity? What's my brand? Because not every feature will fit for your target group. If you're a family bank, it will look differently than if you are a bank focusing on tech-savvy millennials or a green bank, and also have a roadmap that fits who are you, prevents you to build things that customers don't want. And that's something you can know upfront by understanding what is expected from me. I also personally expect different type of features from my incumbent bank than I expect from my neobank. You know, I expect all kind of notifications that are really fit for my situation. And somehow for my incumbent bank, you know, I don't expect it. That's also not what they aim for. This is more like the robust bank that helps me with my financial advice, but not with all the great and nice features. And I think it's also really important to understand it. And in the end, you need a business case. Many of the neobanks are not profitable. Some of the successful ones are slowly getting profitable. But the business case is something you should not forget. It's all about human desirability. What is it that my customer wants? But you need to have a business case too. And then finding something that really fits with who you are as a brand and embedding that in your roadmap, I think is essential to have that business case and also to be successful.
Yeah. Maybe there's also a little bit of the mantra of how do you look at your proposition? Is it inside out, product pushing, product centricity, just like in the keynote this morning? Or is it outside in? What is the actual user expecting from my brand, from my value proposition? And there can be different flavors, right? There can be a very, let's say, longer tenured brand that is more about stability and robustness. Doesn't need to have all the flashy features and notifications and nudges and what have you, but it's just the stable brand in my life. And it could very well be an offshoot, like a greenfield next to it, which is super, let's say, modern, super digital with all the other features that you would expect there. You can even make the combos there. It's like the segment-based banking to a degree. Maybe to wrap it up from the panel's perspective, what's the final key takeaway you would like to share for the audience, which is like a call to action, something that you've seen over the past, let's say, your tenure, where you feel, please take this home?
I think that the way that we are seeing the evolution of the payments and these turning into more global than regional or local, it's how we need to adapt ourselves and how we can build the bank of tomorrow. I was seeing during a panel today, we're talking about segment of one profile. So you need to understand your client. You need to understand how your client behaves for you to improve the way that you engage with them. It's not only by building new flows or by building new channels, but it's understanding how your client behaves and how you can adapt your offering to this client. Sometimes the offering is different for me than for you. And we know that there are tools capable to offer better user experience with an individual perspective, you know? So what we are seeing right now and what we are seeing not only from an European perspective, but when you look into FeedSide with our global footprint, is that the world is converging, you know? And what we're going to see is that 5 or 10 years ago, it was very difficult for you to do a cross-border transaction. Nowadays, you can do it in seconds. So how you can evolve not only your tech stack, how you can evolve your bank, but also how you can protect your clients, because in the end, by having a global connection between accounts and making it possible for the clients to transact all over the world, this means that more fraud will happen, you know? So how you can generate the right protection, but also without generating friction, you know? So the way that we see is that by understanding your client, but also by training the tools that you have based on the way that these clients behave with the channels and behave with the transactions, this will not help you to give them a better experience with your bank, but also you're going to be able to protect them. Mm-hmm. Because if Fabiano never transacts with another country and then he starts to transact, you somehow can take actions without generating lots of friction. So the takeaway here is that payments are evolving. Banks are evolving. The world is turning from local to global. So how I can evolve my bank, how I can evolve my financial institution without obviously looking into the protection, without looking into the security, but thinking that probably in the next 10 years, there won't be borders anymore in terms of how you engage with your bank and how you engage with people from a financial perspective.
Okay, thanks. Matt? Oh, it's going to be a lecture.
Okay. So look, there's 7 minutes counting down. We're going way past 7 minutes. I'm just letting everyone know straight away. So I think I'm just going to double down on what you were saying here. So last year, the global population count was just over 8 billion people. Pretty cool. These are the things that I didn't realize till I did some more research on the customer of the future. So there are 5.48 billion mobile phone devices in the world, unique. Not have two devices, three, four, that's unique devices per person. That's 68.3% of the population have connectivity to the internet. 4.8 billion social media users, again, unique users. So that's 59.9% of the population are on social media in some capacity. As a bank, where are you? I want you to think about that, because if you're not where your customers are, it doesn't matter how shiny your tech is, how cool your brand is, whatever it is. If you can't reach them, it's a problem. Now, the next stat, because I was busy getting its stats, is Next year, 2025, millennials and Gen Z will make up 64% of the global workforce. Again, to go back to the point I was just making, there are different expectations, completely different. My goddaughter, who's 26, which ages me a bit, I know, but she's got 5 bank accounts. She doesn't have a traditional bank account. She has a traditional bank that she has her money paid into day one. Day two, it gets siphoned out to 5 other different banks. One for FX, which I mentioned earlier, one for lending, one for micro investments, and. So the key here, I'll put this book away, otherwise we'll read stats all day. But the key here is, are you servicing your customer? Do you understand your customer? Are you giving them the things that they want? Not what you have. So a great example, I promise I'm going to stop now. I was advising a bank recently about the future of the customer, I said, look, the credit products you're selling, the next generation don't want. And it was a he, because it always is. And he said, but we have credit cards. We have lending. We have mortgages. And I said, they are credit products, but they're not the credit products your customer base, future customer base is after. But that was the argument back and forth, but we have it. And I think it's that realization of just because you have it doesn't mean it's fit for purpose now. I promise I'm stopping talking.
Mic drop. Dollar.
No, good stats. And I enjoyed that. Well. And as a millennial of alpha generation children, my kids already have 2 bank accounts each. One with Starling, one with Bonzo. And I think I've opened one with NatWest. That's 3 each. And they're only 6 and 10. To answer the question in terms of what I think, kind of audience participation here, actually. What's the one thing that traditional banks have in abundance that the natives don't? Feel free to shout.
Branches.
Experience? Anything else? It's close. What was that?
Branches.
What are in branches? Yeah, people. So for me, when I think about that question, it's yes, digital technology is absolutely important, and getting that right is going to be super important. But use what you've got in abundance, which is expertise. This idea of kind of hybrid service offerings is going to be so important, because to be really compelling, to be really differentiated, I feel that yes, technology, being digitally aware, anticipating customer needs, it's very much going to be bread and butter of everybody. But actually what's going to set you apart is being able to offer that hybrid experience, very differentiated, compelling service, especially when it comes to the complex things like, you know, lending, mortgages, investment advice. I think for me, that's where the future needs to be from a traditional banking perspective, to kind of really differentiate between yourselves, the traditional bankers, and the digital natives. I'll leave it there.
Love it. Finally, Irian.
Maybe one final thought on top of these, I think, these great takeaways. I think it's also good for digital natives as well as incumbents to understand, especially also listening to Matt's statistics about the millennial generation and the digital native generation, is that banks, they are not just competing with other banks when it comes down to digital. We call this experience relativity. All the big techs provide the best digital services out there, and it's, I think, important for banks to realize that it's not just, you know, the other banks, it's also big tech, other fintechs that provide that extremely high amount of digital services, and which is important, especially if you look at the new generation that's coming up, that they will not accept any friction anymore. We talked about today, AI, of course, coming up. The very simple basic mobile app will not count anymore. You really need to understand that the game is bigger than just other banks when it comes down to digital servicing.
Yeah, because the comparison is the Netflixes, the Spotifys, like the real modern, super seamless applications that you are, and we are at least, using in our daily lives that we compare to our banking experience.
And it's great to take inspiration from those two. Yeah,
clear platforms by chance. That brings us to a wrap-up. I would really like to thank the panel for all the insights and also the data points, Matt, that you brought to the table. Thank you so much. Having said that, this is a wrap for the panel, and I'd like to wrap it over to Barry. Yeah. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for listening to Banking Reinvented, a podcast by Backbase. Make sure to follow both Jauke and myself on LinkedIn, where we will be sharing key insights about our journey towards modernizing banking.